The word legendary is something that we use, I suppose, perhaps too frequently when we're introducing our guests in many ways, but we're delighted to actually use the adjective legendary in every sense of the word when we speak to somebody who's worked with our wonderful Louis Savvy at Sci-Fi London, has been generally sort of praised highly from the likes of George Lucas onwards. He is the one and only Warwick Davis. Warwick, it's a delight to welcome you to the production. How are you, sir?
Thank you very much. Yeah, very well, thank you.
Brilliant to connect with your good self. Now, I mean, are you going for the title of Renaissance Man, or is this just something which you're just thinking, I mean, you know, you've done your Star Wars, you've done Willow, you've done Doctor Who, you've done Harry Potter, you're doing Celebrity Squares, you've even done the Richard Bacon Show on Radio 5 Live, and now, of course, it's See How They Run in Darlington. You're taking over the stage as well. Amazing.
Well, I'm just doing what I enjoy doing, basically. I mean, I am very fortunate in my career and had a lot of luck. And yeah, I think it's important in life you sort of do what you enjoy. And if it happens to be successful for you, then all the better. You know, as I said, I've been just very, very lucky to do things that I enjoy. And you know, the play that I'm currently doing is no exception to that.
I can sense our Los Angeles correspondents already sort of screaming at the computer saying, it's not luck, Warwick, it's talent. You've got it in abundance. That's the important thing.
Well, I mean, you have to have a bit of that, but I think it's all about networking this business and being in the right place at the right time. And if you look back over my career, it's always about, you know, having been in the right place. The reason I got started in Star Wars that kicked everything off was because my grandmother happened to hear a radio commercial that gave me the opportunity to be in Star Wars, and everything else has just kind of led on from there.
I'm delighted you said that, Warwick. It's always good for us working in radio to know it still has a part to play, which is wonderful.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah.
So let's move from that to Merton cum Middlewick. I'll say that again, Merton cum Middlewick. The location for See How They Run, about to go on to, in fact, doing a whole range of touring factors, but coming up to Darlington, obviously, 22nd to the 26th of April, so an ideal Easter treat. What was the thinking behind actually saying, OK, See How They Run, let's take this, let's actually do it our way?
Well, I mean, firstly, I've always wanted to do a play, I kind of realised that perhaps the way to achieve this ambition was to produce the play and then cast myself in it as the producer. That's the first thing I did. I also wanted to celebrate the other short actors we have in this country and the huge amount of talent there is that is more often than not sort of unrecognised and underused in the various roles that short actors are offered. And so that was the thinking behind setting up the production company, the reduced type theatre company. And the choice of the play was really down to I wanted to produce a comedy, and having read See How They Run, I thought, well, this is a really fun piece. It ticks all the boxes. It's not only very cleverly written, but it's also quite physically demanding and interesting to watch as well. You know, there's a lot going on, and my audience is a very wide demographic, you know, from youngsters to pensioners. And I thought, well, actually, you know, this will appeal to all of those people. You know, and farce is a very particular theatre genre anyway. You know, it's all about mistaken identity and people going in and out of doors, and it's just a lot of fun. It's a real treat in the theatre, so that's why I chose it.
I shall try to avoid saying more tea, Warwick, because obviously that just wouldn't work in any way, shape or form, but more tea, it would lie in its own routine. And it is something which is peculiarly British as well, isn't it, really? I mean, I'm not sure whether, I know Benny Hill goes down well in the States, or used to, etc., and slapstick and farce has a vaudeville tradition, but there's something kind of quite curiously, uniquely British about the British farce, which See How They Run obviously manifests.
Oh, it's very quintessentially British, yeah. I mean, Merton cum Middlewick is a kind of very sort of Middle England village, and, you know, all of the inhabitants speak, you know, very properly, and everything's very proper. I just think it really kind of captures a time in this country when life was a little bit simpler. But actually saying that, life isn't simple on this particular evening for my character, Reverend Lionel Toop, who is the vicar of the parish, married to an actress. You know, the events of the evening actually make his life quite complicated and actually send him half mad during the course of it, which is quite fun.
Well, it's a case of grace under pressure, or your grace under pressure, perhaps.
Well, he tries to have grace, but he does lose that actually at one point, which is quite fun. It's my favourite moment in the play. It's my John Cleese moment.
everybody's got to have at least one John Cleese moment to actually sort of orate essentially with the whole thing. Last week I was driving back from Lincoln up to Teesside, and I was tuned into, yes, I'll name our sister, well, one of our stations, Radio 5 Live. Listen to your good self, obviously, being featured on the Richard Bacon Show, and almost had to draw off the road because you're back on Celebrity Squares. Bob Monkhouse will be looking up from on high, looking down from on high perhaps, and actually saying, Warwick Davis, he's my choice to replace me in Celebrity Squares. What a wonderful gig that must be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Bob was a hero of mine. I remember watching Celebrity Squares as a youngster on a Saturday night with my nan, because my parents would always go out on a Saturday and we'd be in watching the Saturday night quiz shows. And so Bob was certainly a hero. And to Jeff, I think I'm actually taking over and actually hosting Celebrity Squares, albeit a revamped version of the show, is really exciting. I mean, we did a pilot last year, which worked really well. And excited to be bringing that back to ITV.
Yeah, very much so. I'd just like to know who's stepping into Amy McDonald's shoes. Her classic line, I seem to recall from a past Celebrity Squares, when asked the difference between stalactites and stalagmites, her response was, tights must come down. I don't know whether we can use a line in terms of different perspective entirely. Obviously, you mentioned you're involved with the production of See How They Run, which is all connected together from that point of view. Clearly, this is another sort of instance where actually you can do it all. People actually say you can be pigeonholed in every sense. I mean, Warwick, you're proving beyond a shadow of a doubt that you can actually sort of, you know, cross over effectively into production and, of course, performance.
Well, absolutely. I mean, yeah, there's the producing of the play and there's the appearing in it. Both of those are very different roles. You know, the appearing in it is an absolute pleasure. I mean, it's pretty hard work doing farce. You know, you should feel exhausted at the end of the show if you've done it correctly. But the producing side of it is a little more stressful. But again, quite gratifying when you peek through the curtains and you see the audience sitting there in anticipation, and then you hear the applause at the end and realise that you've actually, you know, entertained all of these people. And without your initial thought and work, this wouldn't be happening. So it's good. But I mean, that sort of outweighs the amount of stress that you also have in touring a show like this, and yeah, huge expense of doing it, and all of the things that you have to consider. I mean, there's so many people involved in moving a show around the country like this. But yeah, quite exciting. But yeah, I mean, looking at my sort of broader career, it is quite diverse. I've never really been pigeonholed into one particular type of thing. It's, you know, as you say, Celebrity Squares is kind of expanding on that a little bit further. And we have also the series, my family and I, at the moment, called Weekend Escapes, that's also on ITV at 8 o'clock on a Friday.
It's just a wonderful experience. And I mean, all that from, as Lisette Anthony once said to me when we were doing a radio gig in the 1980s down in Dulwich in London, at the end of the day, the only thing she really enjoyed about the Star Wars scenario was yourself as the Ewok. It's marvellous.
Oh, well, that's very nice.
It is.
Isn't it?
I thought so. Nice. You know, it just adds the sort of quality to every side of things. Warwick, we could go on to talk about a lovely strap line for Willow Personal Management, the biggest agency for short actors in the world. There's so much we could actually sort of walk through, but it's been an absolute delight and joy to connect with your good self today. We've got two final critical questions, apart from flagging up the fact that See How They Run is on at the Darlington Civic Theatre between Tuesday the 22nd to Saturday the 26th of April. So you've even got William Shakespeare's birthday celebrated in there as well. You know, give yourself a treat. Go and see, you know, the Warwick and performance of the whole thing. Two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on your midweek drive debut today?
Has it been okay for yourself?
It's our customer satisfaction thing, Warwick. You know, it's
no,
very
I'm
important.
Very, very satisfied with the telephonic link, and the quality of the interview has been superb. Thank you.
Well, then the next critical question is, could we prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future and keep us updated with life in the Warwick Davis world?
I would love to do that. Absolutely. Be a pleasure.
Warwick Davis, we salute you. Many thanks indeed.
Of course, in issue 230 of SFX, we actually had a Warwick Davis quote in the quote box, which was celebrating a wicket, and his line was, "There are Star Wars fans who don't appreciate Ewoks for what they were. We kicked ass and helped the rebels defeat the Empire. Without us, what would have happened?" Okay, critical question, Rachel Warren, isn't it, in many ways?
Yeah.
Even though you're more of a kind of Harry Potter Warwick Davis fan, but next time I will bring you in to do a chat with Warwick as well from that point of view. Of course, we still have Michael Woodall from LPAC Producers with us, and of course, Michael's co-producer, or how would you define yourself, Lauren, as opposed to human being?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
yeah, co-producer, I guess. I mean, I wasn't actually part of the original producers when they started last year, but
long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago, but I think I've established myself as quite a key part of this,
of course,
team now.
And we'll find that out, you know, as the whole procedure develops, really. Meanwhile, for our friends in the Crimea.
Привіт, ви слухаєте Софія Бак з директором Філ Лініс із Лос-Анджелеса на Midweek Drive на Siren FM.
Because I feel it's our bit of a world peace, isn't it, Phil Lianis, to actually ensure that you know our friends in the Russian capital and indeed the Ukraine actually sort of connect with that whole thing. Welcome aboard, director extraordinaire from Los Angeles, with your director's notes. That would be Phil Lianis. How are you?
I'm stunned to find that I have a following in the Crimea. That's.
Phil, listen, we are now weeks away from the seventh anniversary of Chilpak Hollywood, the podcast. Also weeks away from the return of the World Science Fiction Convention to London, England. And just a matter of weeks away from the 2000th Podbean podcast for the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition packages.
Which makes it seem like, therefore, I am months away from ever being fully well-rested.
Oh, listen, we all say here collectively, get well soon, Dean Haglund, because he was a bit rough on the latest edition of Chilpak Hollywood, which I suspect, Michael, you haven't managed to download as yet, Chilpak Hollywood Hour.
No.
A treat for in store for yourself. Likewise, Lauren.
No.
Like War of the Worlds, you love Chilpak Hollywood, in which we actually see the possible connection between Kate Jurgens, or is it Jurgens, ABC Executive Vice President, and...
No, you didn't get the name.
Did
that's
I not?
That's not who it is. There's no connection there. Let me hold it. You see, you tried to get clever, didn't you? You tried to do research and find out.
Just figured when you were going into the notion of ABC, conceivably, the station that brought you Lost, of course, amongst other things, having every single one of its shows not renewed other than Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and even that's open to debate, I thought you might be into it. Anyway, yes, it's over to you, Phil. It is your segment in the show, after all.
Yes. Well, I will just try to, for your listeners, I will just explain this story, but the person will remain anonymous. Yes, they're, the senior vice president in charge of dramatic programming at ABC is someone to whom I reached out to try to do my level best, you know, because I can be charming if the situation is absolutely desperately calling for it. And I reach out to her in an effort to hopefully encourage a second season renewal of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because it is a show I enjoy, and I even wrote in my little missive, and because it's important that I have at least one network show that I can watch each year, because generally most of the shows that I watch are on cable networks here in the States, not on what we consider the traditional broadcast networks. Those being ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox. And so I reached out to her, but I had to reveal on our show, of course, that I had been romantically involved with this woman for 2 years, and it occurred to me in hindsight after reaching out to her that fact may not have helped my cause.
Well,
but
might
have hurt my cause. So if Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not get renewed, I can only say I'm sorry that I got involved.
Well, just...
It might be my fault.
Don't worry, just let it go. That's the important thing. I don't know if you've managed to catch any of the programme. We've been fairly quiet in terms of our link-ups. Jamie Anderson's sent in a nice little email with thanking us for our contributions and various best wishes, really, for AndaCon, which, of course, kicks off this weekend. Jamie, of course, will be back with us before too long. But where would you like to start? Because Michael and... Lauren are both new to the whole Midweek Drive experience. Rachel, normally, of course, you're a midnight in Los Angeles kind of gal,
yeah,
because it's 8 a.m. when the Midweek Drive Morning Edition, but the power of the fringe.
Well, yes.
The power of fringe.
Well, then I should probably introduce this this concept, this responsibility that I wear with, hopefully with dignity and honor, to provide some director's notes on the show that was. You know, to connect some of the dots as I heard them, as these seeds were planted throughout the show. Indeed, I have been listening to most of it. I did not post, I realize, a comment saying that I did or saying that I was going to be on the show, because quite frankly, Alex, I'm
I am operating on such sleep deprivation. So it really has been delightful. I apologize for not promoting my appearance or that I was listening.
Just let it go. Having to sort out the Ukrainian-Russian situation is challenge enough for you, my son.
But I have enjoyed, and in fact, yes, my co-pilot, Fuzz Aldrin, my 2.5-year-old cat, and I have been curled up, sipping on coffee, enjoying it. And I, of course, from listening to the show that Dean and I do, Chilpak Hollywood Hour, that obviously science fiction is near and dear to our hearts, but also this concept of quality roles for women, both in front of and behind the camera, and how important that is. And it occurred to me in listening to several of your guests discuss this, and in a discussion that I actually had about comedy with some aspiring writers and showrunners earlier in the week, that the word, as so often comes to mind when we talk about what makes storytelling work and sometimes why it doesn't resonate with us, the word that needs to be thrown into the mix here is vulnerability. What makes so often heroes, especially in genre, be that genre science fiction or be it just action or adventure, what makes heroes so compelling, what makes characters so compelling, is their vulnerability. And when you think of the idea, whether it be Shakespeare or whether it be science fiction, to take a story and set it somewhere far away in a time far removed from ours, but thereby inspire us to somehow take that journey and end up closer to truths that affect our daily existence in the here and now, it strikes me that the vulnerability of characters is what makes them so universal and makes them so attractive. And we've gone through, sadly, it seems, several decades of male heroes in films, again, whatever the genre, being typified almost by their comic bookish invulnerability. And this started in the 70s, of course, with characters like Dirty Harry, and continued in the kind of the Schwarzenegger vein. But really, it's very difficult to find actors today, male actors, whose stock in trade is vulnerability, and being able to depict that vulnerability for what it is, which is strength. And what we see so often in science fiction films that are driven by female protagonists, it's their very vulnerability that invites us in and that ultimately allows them to explore their own strength. And that's where we're at as a culture, is, you know, we want to, I think, be able to embrace the fact that, look, sometimes we feel weak, sometimes we feel frightened, sometimes we feel overwhelmed by the odds, but it's in those moments that we are most human. And when we are most human, we are most capable of forming the wide relationship to all of our attributes. And no matter who we are, our greatest strengths will sometimes become our greatest weaknesses, and our weaknesses will be revealed to be great strength. And I think that storytellers are doing a great job of exploring that, especially when they have some of these particularly talented female performers embody these protagonists.
Okay.
So that's my two cents.
Rachel, mm-hmm. would you say Anna Torv manifests that in terms of Fringe, or would you say, no, it's totally droll?
Fringe, everyone, I think, every good character has to have a weakness, because otherwise they're not really relatable. No one likes a perfect person. So I think in order to...
Well, that explains my lack of a social life then. Sorry. Just couldn't do whatever. Will. Michael, I should say. Will. you look very like a Will for a moment there. Anyway, Michael.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think in a lot of modern movies and books, you can also see the vulnerability in a lot of villains. And I think it's important for us to understand why these people make decisions that they do. And it's easy just to see that everyone's human. And no matter what gender plays these villains or heroes, we can see that there's a human behind every character, and it's good to...
Well, and I think it goes one step further, especially when it's well done, and I think in the Marvel universe, what sets the Marvel universe of characters so far apart is all of these characters can kind of be summed up with a theme for me, that which wounds us ultimately can heal us, because the source of all of these heroes' strength ends up being either the emotional or physical wounding that they endured. That ends up being from where they derive their strength. And in that universe, one of the reasons why the Black Widow, the character's name escaping me, Alex, help me out. Who does Scarlett Johansson play?
That would be Natasha the Black Widow.
Yes, Natasha, thank you. Why that character stands out as so resonant is because her wounding is not physical. Her wounding really is derived from recognizing all the bad that she has done, all the destructive behavior. And yet, by really looking at it in honest terms, in honestly assessing her life, she's able to form a new relationship to it and become someone who comes out the other side of fighting for things that matter. So it truly, you know, is unique even within the Marvel Universe. In fact, I'm a big fan of the X-Files, of course. Dean Haglund being on the X-Files for so many years. It was always very interesting to me that Mulder, the character of Agent Mulder, here's a character with great vulnerability. But the vulnerability so often for male characters has to come from without. It has to be, okay, Mulder's sister was abducted, and that affected him. Or a character getting injured by another. But what writers are seeming to do so effectively with female characters is they're able to go inside the character and find the origin of the vulnerability. And that's even more exciting. That's even more interesting, again, for an audience member, regardless of whether that audience member is male or female, because we all feel within us these vulnerabilities, and our initial instinct so often is, oh, we need to suck it up. And if we're boys, right, we're told so often the message, oh, act like a man, which we take to mean pretend you have no vulnerabilities, pretend you have no weaknesses. And again, it ignores and stunts real growth, which comes from recognizing what you perceive as your weaknesses, finding a way to explore them and maybe even love them, and be able to reap strength from that relationship. And these female characters do that, and it makes them role models for both men and women.
Phil, we'll halt it there momentarily, because I've just realised I've been most remiss. I haven't prepped Rachel for the show tomorrow morning, which, of course, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Last week, of course, Rachel, this is coming to be around about 22 a.m., so 1:40 a.m. in Los Angeles time. You spoke to Dean Elliott. You weren't familiar with Simon and Garfunkel.
I wasn't. No.
Here they are.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make
Phil, one of the reasons for featuring Paul Simon and Art Garfunkel is not because that's what Penny Evans is feeling particularly at present, or because Nikki Wells is a little bit upset because of the AC/DC demise. Don't worry, it'll all work out well. Or indeed the fact we haven't actually heard from Gabriella Peralta, but it is indeed the notion that with Annette Andre going to be delivering next week the last ever East Coast audio missive on this show before she actually becomes another West Coast correspondent, Ilana Rain having moved from New York to Los Angeles, do you think, Phil, that Tara Bennett will make a suitable successor to actually step into their shoes from a Philadelphia perspective as US editor for SFX?
Absolutely. I was really won over by Tara. I mean, both, look, she's, it's that very nice combination where she's an excellent writer and she's able then to communicate ideas verbally as well in a voice that is both compatible with her writing voice, but also explores them in a way that's best enjoyed in conversation. So that's a great twofer, and you're lucky to have her.
Well,
it's critical in every sense of the word. It's very essential that the team, and as you're well aware, Phil, ever since the moment when I thrust a microphone in your face at Sci-Fi London a few years ago, we always recruit the very best. This was just after he got off the plane. I thought it was very important. I like a bit of aggressive journalism, but still. As we put up on our Facebook site, Earth is not a platform for human life, it's a living being. We're not on it, but part of it. Its health is our health. That's our little thought for the day. Anyway.
You know, Alex, you mentioned that in a few weeks' time, I think it's three episodes from now, mm-hmm. Dean and I will be celebrating 7 years of our podcast. We've never missed a week in 7 years, so we're approaching, you know, what is it, 360-something episodes of your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. And one of the things we've invited listeners to do is to send us some of their favorite memories of the show, and we'll share those on the anniversary. And I've been so, I don't know whether amazed is the right word, but just in some way pleased that many people have weighed in that the 28-hour Mayan podcastathon that was a joint UK-US effort involving Chill Pack
Hollywood Hour. I'm pleased you remember that, Phil. Sometimes I think they don't talk about the 25 hours we did that side of the Atlantic whatsoever. You know?
Yeah, so it was really it was great that they brought that up, because again there was a certain sense of it that we were a little bit insulated and in a vacuum.
We saved the world, Phil. We saved the world.
But really, it was nice to hear about that, and then nice to hear that one of the things that they like about it was that it led to so much interaction between listeners. And I find that incredibly rewarding. You know, when you hear that things that you're talking about on the show leads to people who listen to the show forming a bond with each other.
So we've had Cameron's musical choice. We've had Anna Lewis with A Chicken Farm, or indeed just The Chickens of Jersey. It's wonderful. John Gerald, of course, with his definition of fantasy. I don't agree with you, John. Sorry. Never mind. He's a Lincoln-inspired patron, so good news from that. Michelle Monroe back live with us in every sense of the word. But I know, ultimately, Lauren is keen for us to ask you the question, Phil. What can you tell us about your flying monkeys? Yeah. There we are, you see.
I might have missed that part of the show, apparently. I was hoping that you were going to ask me to weigh in on the definition of fantasy versus sci-fi.
Well, I think we've got time for you to do that, but as Rachel rightly reminded me just a few moments ago, given that it received the Tara Bennett seal of approval to those last two questions, what can you tell us about your flying monkeys? My particular little quote from a Tara Bennett interview with Sam Raimi, I think, you know, may well be added and will emerge every so often. You know, we'll drop it in to various people when they least expect it, has to be said. In fact, dare I say it, Phil, you might like to throw it at Dean Hagland next week's Chill Pack Hollywood show, effectively. Just a thought there. Anyway, would you like to define science fiction and fantasy for us and tell us why Game of Thrones is quite clearly hardcore SF? Because that's what George Martin refers to it as. But then, as Rachel's just said, what about Death of the Author? Oh.
I find myself suddenly feeling as if I'm in an alternate universe where suddenly my Crimean introduction made more sense to me than still your explanation of the flying monkeys question. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, to me, it's always been a fundamental issue in that the word science in science fiction is important, no matter how many times we abbreviate it to sci-fi or, gosh, help me, SYFY, as the network became here in this country, because there was no science and hardly any fiction. But it's always seemed to me that science is the important thing, and so if you're telling a story that requires an underpinning of science as we understand it to support that fictional terrain, that fictional terrain could not exist without this principle or these principles of science, then it is science fiction. If your storytelling terrain is a flight that either subverts that science, transcends that science, ignores that science, then you've ventured into the realm of fantasy, even if it includes science. It's science fantasy versus science fiction, let's say. So that's where I always draw the line. Is the science being honored, and is it required for that world that you're creating to exist.
So can we agree on that one then, as a kind of crunch out, Rachel, or would you sort of say no, and once the author's released his work into the text, it's up to other people to actually concede what it is? And so it goes with Jeff Wayne's musical version of The War of the Worlds, alive on stage, which of course you're seeing in Brighton, are you not, Lauren?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, well, that would be on the 14th or the 15th of December.
I actually don't remember.
You don't remember?
The 14th, I think.
Well, could have sort that day out, because who knows what could happen on that particular aspect.
I don't want to be going on the wrong date.
I would have thought that would have been fairly critical to the whole setup, etc. A final plug, Michael, for the Spring Fling.
Yes, so Spring Fling is happening just outside the Lincoln Forming Arts Centre on the 26th of May. It's basically a chill-out day for students and the rest of the community. Sumo suits, bungee run, sports day races, craft stores and live music. It's going to be a great day.
Next week on the Madrid Drive, we have Robert Lloyd Parry, actor and star of the one-man show The Time Machine, science fiction on stage just ahead of LA SciFest, with all sorts of wonderful setups, a one-person interpretation of The Time Machine, 7:30 p.m, Lincoln Drill Hall. And tickets are mere £8 or £6. That's roughly around $15 and sort of $7 or $8, really. A snip, really. It's just something Sarah Bullimore insisted that we actually make sure was clearly put together. Phil Learness, anything else you'd like to say about the programme? You've got a minute and a half to do so, or you might even like to just ask Michael Wardall and Lauren Buck how they found their first ever experience, and indeed Rachel, how she's found her first evening Midweek Drive.
That's too much to get done in a minute and a half. So I will begin by saying that Alana Rain, to whom you referred earlier, is indeed officially now a Los Angeles, not only filmmaker, but a West Coast correspondent of your show, because we finally got together and had a meeting her having been here a year. As you know, Alex, it is not official. You have not relocated until you sit down with Phil Learness.
Of course.
And get his director's notes, quite frankly. So, indeed, I would say that Annette Andre and her husband, Arthur Weingarten, have that to look forward to. Their interview. Is it an entrance interview or an exit interview? It depends on one's point of view. But they must have their interview with me before they can be considered West Coast correspondents on the Midweek Drive.
It's a bit like that little island just outside the Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island, I think, really, except it's not a California thing.
But Alana and I were discussing part of a science fiction anthology project that I am working on and have been starting to put together, and it's a feature film, as I said, based on different an anthology of stories, all of which involve different perceptions of the concept of time.
And there you have it. Rachel, last three questions for Phil Dearness, please.
Well, I could ask him that. We've already asked him about flying monkeys. I'll just use the... So have you enjoyed our telephonic link today?
Oh, it was great fun.
You're good. And can we look forward to talking to you again sometime?
I will be back next Wednesday.
As indeed will William Coles, our ace novelist and former tabloid journalist. Robert Lloyd Parry will be talking about The Time Machine on stage. Annette Andre will be back with us. Cameron Tilbury, Anna Lewis and Tallulah Randall. And probably Holly Cox for at least half an hour of the show. Ed Wellman will be back with us as well. Have you enjoyed the show, Michael?
It's been great, yeah.
And Lauren?
Yes, it's been great, thank you.
There we are. Hats off to Lauren Buck and Michael Woodall, LPAC producers. That's Lincoln Pauling Arts Centre producers. Midweek Drive Morning Edition on tomorrow morning. Are you with us then, Rachel?
Should be.
Yay! Excellent stuff. Phil might be getting some sleep. Then again, maybe not. News coming up for the Sky News Centre. Then we've got Groundworks, all this and more on the award-winning Siren FM. Can we all say bye-bye?
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.